Okay, hi everyone. Thank you for joining this talk, and I would like to thanks to Anselm Franke and Hyunjin Kim and also David Tae for realizing this very important show, I believe, and also this wonderful event. Okay, I don't have to introduce myself because. Hanangu, Miss Hanangu, show my face so big. Okay. So this time I want to talk a little bit about a few concepts around tradition and Orientalism and I would call colonial unheimlich. Okay. But I want to start from the Korean art movement in the 1980s. So in the 80s, what we call 민족 art can be translated literally as national art and 민중 art, people art or people's art, was used to describe artistic practice based on anti-dictatorship, anti-colonial, and resistant nationalism. So when we currently consider these terms, they sound like really dead words, especially the 민족 and 민중, like the language, the words favored in maybe in North Korea. North Korea always say the nation first, the Korea first, and the nation first. And so these words are really not really cool, especially for the young people. And one you can see here is the banner painting based on wood block print by Choi Byung-su, the artist, one of the representative examples of 민족 art or 민중 art. At the time, people thought that the wood block print as a medium might constitute the 민족 art or entail a Korean traditional form of it. But this 민족 art or 민족 itself, these days, the popularity of the word has drastically declined over the period of the last 10 or 20 years. There may be many different reasons, but it's too difficult to analyze it, but probably the biggest power would be the globalization of Korea in the last 20 years. So there are a couple of other different examples include Oyun's work in the form of traditional Buddhist paintings, kind of satirizing capitalism. So you can see these kinds of paintings in the Korean temples everywhere. It's the image of hell, and he kind of criticizes capitalism, consumerist capitalism. By using this image of hell of in a Buddhist imagination. Okay, and it wasn't just 민족 art. Probably there are some other examples like Oyun's other painting. So in there, there are some kind of adaptation of the 민화, is a folk art form, and this color and the way he depicts figures. And also he intentionally made like a really kind of scroll painting, resembles the kind of Sansu, Chinese landscape painting. But at the same time, if you dig into these forms he did in this painting, he applied a lot not only from these Korean old paintings or, Buddhist paintings, but, he had, you know, a lot of influence from like Picasso and Posada from Mexico. So again, it's not really purely Korean thing. Okay, other example by Choi Min-ha. And in this painting, I interviewed him, and he said he really wanted to invent a new form, contemporary form of folk art tradition in Korea. So he really intentionally made all this, you know, weird tree, palm tree, and this color with the mountain and the sky. And artists of Dansekwa, or in English it's monochrome painting. And another important part of the Korean modern art, often suggested traditional ceramics or Eastern traditional landscape paintings as their core inspirations. This means traditional philosophy and culture served as key discursive platform both for calm formalistic paintings and anti-colonial resistant art practices like Minjok or Minjung art. So this is Lee Yu-hwan's painting. He's a Korean painter, stayed long time in Japan, and he was the leading figure of this monochrome painting. And it made really a huge market these days, and kind of representative kind of art practice in Japan and Korea. It's become like $1 million paintings. Anyway, I would like to say that tradition as discourse once constituted a core podium and critical issue, and this is not really accidental. These issues, Minjok form, Eastern aesthetics, anti-colonialism, applying tradition in art practice, and so on, which are not as simple as various entanglings of the symbolic institution or the politics of identity, are more complicated and entrenched than they appear. In a state of cultural colonization, artists would think that they needed to make use of tradition, naturally almost. However, the question is, which indications of Asian or Oriental tradition can be used to distinguish Korea or Asia or East from the West? I personally agree that it seems appropriate to see in general that, am I reading okay? Okay. That no realistic criteria can create these divisions. Even if this is true, it does not mean that qualities of tradition, nation, the East or Asia are not significant or useful as practical paradigm. I mean, it's useful. I'm meaning it's not, it is useful, okay? Kim Soo-young's poem is the best example to declare these thoughts. The poet and the critic, also he was the really horribly good writer also, essayist, and Kim Soo-young once wrote that, this is famous phrase, traditions, no matter how filthy, are good. This can be a kind of strategic lie or poetic exclamation, kind of exaggeration. It may catch us red-handed like a ghost. This famous phrase, actually, this phrase appeared in a high school textbook, and everyone said it's like a really nationalistic poem. But what I'm claiming here is not, this poem is not nationalistic at all. And this famous phrase below you see is excerpts from his poem Colossal Roots, written in 1964. So can you? Yeah, can read. I made mark on the kind of important part of the lines. So it starts with the first line, I still do not know how to sit properly. And this is really funny, isn't it? Because, I mean, this his style, that he his poem is like a really kind of dry, and it's like a little memo. And he's famous with this kind of non-style style. And also the famous for difficulty, this difficult to understand. Okay, and this first line is kind of indication of this uneasiness to have kind of proper lifestyle and don't know how to sit. And a few friends of him knew how to sit, and one sit in Japanese way, and the other one sit as a labor, working class way, but he doesn't know how to sit. In the second paragraph, reading a book about Korea written by Isabella Bird Bishop, who was a visitor to Korea, and he repeats what she describes, that Korea is very odd country with such a remarkable custom. So there is plenty of inaccurate information in her book. However, here it says Kim Soo-young is in a relationship with Bird Bishop. Even if Bird Bishop had a profound affection to Korea, she was a prominent Orientalist, kind of first-generation Orientalist with a quite imperialist perspective. But looking at Korea through Bird Bishop's eyes, Kim was able to fall in love with it. So this is the second phrase. And he openly is so bold to say that I am in love with Isabel Bird Bishop. And actually he introduced in the poem that she was the first head of the royal blah, 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 blah. And he actually read this book in English because it was not translated. So there's some another kind of detour of this kind of language game. Quoted what the book said. And then finally he concluded the tradition, no matter how fierce, are good. And he continued with this sentence, since encountering Mrs. Bishop, it is not so hard for me to put up with Korea. Rotten country, though it is, rather I am awed by it. History, no matter how fussy, is good. I will skip a little. I am in love with Mrs. Bishop, the progressives and socialists are son of bitches. Unification, it means unification of two Korea, South and North, and neutrality are all pure shit. So he shows his anger to the all this ideology and politics. Okay. Okay. But then he moved to what he likes. He likes chamber pots, headbands, long pipes, nursery stores, and so on, and ignorant folk. And all reactions are good. Okay, I will return to the poem later on. And then the last sentence is really weird. All these little kind of traditional things, this is translation of the old objects that exist in Joseon Dynasty. So when I read it in Korean, the original text, all these words are not really familiar to me. I can exactly know merely half of it. So yeah, it's English, okay? And all these objects come together and make kind of a horrible image. He said it's kind of mammoths in horror movies, and crows, and big magpies. And this is really strange. I found this is colonial unheimlich. And he might saw the film like a King Kong, in black and white film, and I think it's probably could be I think possible to for him to see this film, and this old dead objects from Joseon Dynasty became like a King Kong. So even if so the kind of nonsense here is that Kim Soo-young looks into himself with the bird bishop's eyes and falls in love with what he sees. His orientalist reconsideration of his own memories, his poem's foundation and its structure, metaphorically imply a certain ambiguity, such as the definition of orientalism, the difficulties of criticism, and so on. We can consider Shin Hak-cheol's painting as a kind of correspondence to Kim's poem. This is a painting by Shin Hak-cheol in 1973. It's one of the other representative artists of the Minjung art, entitled Night Walking. An old man with a cart, cart is the traditional hat, on his head walks limply on a hollow of empty road. There's somehow a painful or kind of odd atmosphere on this painting. And it stretches the sense of tragic on tradition as unreturnable place to anyone who only has a memory about it. And this is another painting by Min Jung-gi and they are good friends. I think they share a lot in the manner of this painting, how they see the tradition and traditional icons. Okay. What I think about these paintings is that many critics of Orientalism and tradition, like, you know, like a side, but more Eric Hobsbawm, see a tradition as a subject or place for the fabrication of certain ideologies. Of course, a modern state could take advantage of the authority of traditions through inventing tradition, as the Anselm and Hyunjin talked about in the previous talk. Whether or not modernity or the modern state use or do not use the authority of tradition through the invention of tradition, its continuity is means of utilizing the past for the present. Korean modern politics is generated when the ideological usage of tradition and the fabrication of collective memory are integrated with the claims of the common truths of the past, present, or future. And the causation of the of using the efficacy, the effect of the past to alienate the wrong elements of the past. This becomes even more complicated as the two do need to be differentiated. Besides, when one attempts to use tradition to make sense of the present's ruptures with the efficacy of the past, or to make it moment to look into the present in a bigger time frame, we also become concerned with falling into the trap of the manipulation of ideology and the claim of truth. This could be another form of Orientalism. This is concern as it may occur in many times in reality. I will elaborate more on this. We can ask if the revival of tradition employed for nation-state undertakings, which Western intellectuals like Said and Hobsbawm and so on criticize, can be applied to Asian countries with different histories as targets of criticism. If so, one can still question whether the methodologies of the West are valid. For instance, in Korea, institutions like national museums, you know, national treasure museum, national, the ethnographic museum, and so on, or state designated cultural properties and institutions are constructed for the benefit of the nation state. That's true. But as institutions for the formulation of the nation state, they remain ideological. Despite this, however, some of those who have participated in such projects desperately say that tradition could have disappeared if we didn't even have these apparatuses, the government policy and the cultural department and heritage trustees and so on. It might have all evaporated. When Poetkin wrote, tradition is good, no matter how fierce it is, it comes from this urgency and desperation. Something very worthy to take a lot of serious risks. Risks that can be ideologically dangerous, politically incorrect, or aesthetically anachronistic. I am questioning whether critics of Orientalism can be solely justified in this context. Maybe it is very naive to say it, but we are often too much afraid of Orientalism. So I'm saying many times to my students and in the lectures, don't be afraid of Orientalism. Myself, who's now living in the colonized cultural era, disapprove of Orientalism. By choosing the safer or intellectually persuasive side, while hiding behind criticism on Orientalism. So this might mean a mere return to another myth called modernity. It's just kind of hiding behind the criticism on Orientalism, not thinking about how we go further. Don't we have a tendency to regress toward what is evident and where there is no room for further criticism? Even the wild images of the rebels influenced by Western leftist Orientalism may exist. I mean, in CNN, it's clear that they like to see all these brutal battles and massacre and political chaos. That's another Orientalism. In other words, we ought to look into questions of what theoretical and practical motivations are left after the criticism of Orientalism, or what types of post-Orientalism can be encouraged and shaped. That is, I think, is a really real question. The text is quite long. Okay, I try fast. We can detect countless examples of Orientalism and criticize them. This is the simplest level. We can also endlessly condemn the politics of looking up toward the West. We can keep analyzing the cause of this inferiority and demythologize it with kind of, you know, this Roland Barthes idea of demystifying myths. However, is it enough? The problematic reason why tradition is trapped within Orientalism is that tradition integrates with the fatigue of modernity and with the disappointment of Western culture as much as it relies on myths of imperialism. So maybe you can think about very typical Orientalism, like, you know, it's not purely Orientalism, but it has been used as very Orientalistic imagination, like Zen Buddhism, meditation, all these things. What I'm trying to say is the fact that the general frustration of Western modern civilization elevates these expectations onto the of the Zen Buddhism, for example, meditation and other practices cannot be solely identified as Orientalism. This certainly has the generated typical Orientalist images, but typical Orientalism itself also has its certain sincerities. Thus, Orientalism is hard to separate from demystification and ideological criticism. Rather, what is required is a rupture at aesthetic and even ontological levels involved in the reproduction of Orientalism. The entity of Orientalism cannot be shaken unless it goes through the full process of internalizing and incarnating Orientalism, overturning its values, and ceaseless competition between different categories. So then, what aesthetic methodology or characteristics that could be this rupture or reach to quote-unquote ontological level can be thought? Tradition that is not mere sign or code, but brings collective quote-unquote unconsciousness or long-term continuity, can it be called tradition real? I don't know, I just put it. I don't know how to call it, but it seems like tradition real, so please understand. We can consider this another method using Western cultural terms, namely the, I don't know, it's just, I think it's kind of close to the what I think about tradition real. Grotesque, neo-Gothic, the sublime, Asian Gothic, or colonial unheimlich. For the poet Kim, the Kim Soo-young, it is the Gothic figure of Mimas, or the crow, the non-speakable sublime images. It can be tiger too, right? There are a lot of tigers. And epitomizing these features, maybe this painting can be the good example of the Asian Gothic, neo-Gothic Asian tradition real by Min Jung-gi, the same artist you saw in the previous slide. So The painting is not categorized as the typical landscape one sees from the distance, but rather want to be seen as a kind of hallucination. It can be explained as animistic as well as an expansion of the animalistic senses interacting with nature. At this level, tradition is not reduced to semiotics or expression. Rather, it is kind of force. I wouldn't say physical force, but kind of force, which can be felt or can be understood. Can be channeled by a collective body. It's more like I'm trying to say this is very bodily experience and hard to identify in cultural terms. And one other good example would be this tiger appeared in Apichapong Wirasetakun's film, the famous film Tropical Malady. We talk a lot about tiger, but nobody talk about Apichapong's tiger, so I want to put it here. You have to see the film. I mean, the tiger appeared in the wood, and the soldier who lost in the wood and deep forest, and just all of a sudden he confronted with a big tiger, and it was like a really, the soldier got really horrified, and calling for murder and different segments of his memory and probably others' memory and some legend coming to the scene. So this whole being, whole existence was really trembling in this moment of film. I will just jump a little bit. There's another example by Jero Zigen, based in Osaka. It's an avant-garde group of people in the 60s and 70s. And they were less known in contemporary art scene because of the other avant-garde movement based in Tokyo. So, but they play a lot with this, the hard to know fairy tales and legend of ancient time Japanese stories in their kind of avant-garde look like avant-garde performances. Okay, I'll jump. I will return to the poem. The colossal roots in this context. Okay, is the tradition that transcends simple depiction or iconography. In this phrase, traditions, no matter how filthy, are good. The tradition is, he said, it's dirty, it's filthy, and the poet still likes it, which indeed invokes physical memories beyond their language, ideology, and probably even culture. Thus, the poet said, neither progressivism, socialism, unification, all these things, they are significant. They are not significant. Therefore, this bears no relation to any lines such as national archetype or sense of Eastern cultures. Rather, tradition beyond culture relates to ghosts, the unspeakable long-term past that still haunts us. So tradition, when I say, say the tradition is not the code or language or even culture, that tradition is not something that I want to define the tradition as, not something that we can call it, but it comes to us. So the so to return to the poem again, while reading Kim Soo-young reading Bird Bishop, he comes to like, you know, chamber pots, all these small things like long pipes, nursery stores, one-eyed people, barren women, and shoe shops, and so on. These are his huge roots, greater than the, as he put, the underwater steel beams of the Third Han River Bridge. At the time, the Third Han River Bridge was the biggest construction, I guess. If a critic of Orientalism avoids the object of its criticism, it is also unsound. Sorry. Criticizing Orientalism is fine, it's good, but a more flexible approach within the structure of Orientalism itself should be entailed in the criticism. Criticism of Orientalism should be better than Orientalism itself, or should contain certain surpassing elements within it. The criticism and the exceeder may conflict with each other in practice. Even the critical reflection of what is not Orientalism may be derived from outer, especially Western perspectives. This is imperative. What we can do in between escaping the Orientalist structure and demystifying it may even include intentional use of Orientalism. Kim Soo-young, through much trial and error, the poet, finally used Bird Bishop's perspective to see. He saw traditional Korean headbands made of horsehair through Bird Bishop's eyes. This is kind of poetic, kind of showing this complexity of how to get out of this Oriental colonial culture in the maze. And he wanted to make, as a poet, he wanted to make kind of break. And this break is something that haunts him like a mammoth. Okay, I will quickly show my own work. I'm an artist, sorry. So, okay. So this image, I borrowed this form from Oyun's painting. You saw there's like a band marching and the ghost marching. I got this idea from his painting and also from this poem, specific poem, Colossal Root. This is like a 30 minutes long, so I will show just part of it. this was not the most dramatic part of the film. This work is called Citizens Forest, and I showed in the last Taipei Biennale, will be shown in the Basel Unlimited exhibition in June. So if you are interested, you can see whole thing. This is just Korean words for 필en dank. Thank you. Okay. All right.